Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 4 of the FASD Success Show. Just like the voice actress aforementioned, I am your host, Jeff Noble, and I just want to say, whether this is your very first episode or you are in fact on episode 4 with us, thank you very much. You know, I could be a little bit more relaxed now. We put out the first 3 episodes and I really wasn't quite sure about the response. So now that we got some feedback, people seem to like it. You know, nobody said anything negative to me, at least not to my face. But we do welcome all kinds of feedback because we want to make sure the show has longevity and it's excellent. So for those of you who did give positive reviews, positive feedback, man, I really appreciate it. And thanks for those who are looking out for my well-being. And, you know, on episode 3, I opened with the fact that we did have the flu, but we seemed to get over that only to catch a cold. I don't know what it is. I think it's children. So now I am walking around with hand sanitizer like in my pocket, like a little bottle. It was Olivia's first cold. It's sad to see because normally she's so jovial and happy, but she was not feeling very well. And I tell you what, if mucus was a natural resource that was profitable, I would be a gazillionaire. I know she's such a tiny little baby, but it just didn't stop. And I know some of you are probably laughing because that's what happens, but it just wouldn't turn off. And I said, where is this coming from? But she made it through. She was also teething at the same time. No wonder there's childhood amnesia, right? No wonder by the time you're 7, your memory of your earlier years is erased, because it's tough, man. It's tough. Your immune system's working. You know, you're getting sick, antibodies, all of that stuff. So it's cool. She's cool. We're feeling great. And again, thanks so much for everybody that left a comment. It was super humbling, and I'm glad you liked it. And we're going to keep doing it. We got a lot of excellent episodes just like this one. So I will tell you this, in my haste to, you know, just get the episodes out there and see what happens, and so I don't have to live with this internal anxiety anymore, I can just share it with everybody else. In the midst of that, there's stuff I'm supposed to mention, you know, when you're Googling what you should say in a podcast or how you should structure it. And I did mention in the actual interviews, I kept saying, show notes. Yeah, check the show notes. I'll put it in the show notes. Well, in my newbieism as a newbie podcaster, I forgot to tell you where to find those. So here's what you can do. You can go to, we have our own blog. So whenever I say, hey, check out the show notes, or we'll put it on the blog, we'll put it in the show notes, we're actually putting it at, get ready for this, unless you're driving, do not, you know, don't text and drive. www.fasdsuccess.com/podcast. I know, super original. We're actually rebranding to FASD Success, so we are going to have a brand new website soon. But anyways, so fasdsuccess.com/podcast. So all of those things I referenced, like especially in the last or in the second episode, was it the last one? I think the second one with Audrey, yes. There was some stuff that I mentioned about free training that CanFASD provides, so that's where you'll find it. Okay, cool. So I just wanted to, you know, get right out there and say that. So far, we've had, you know, myself doing a little bit of an introduction story in episode 1. Episode 2, we talked to Audrey McFarlane, the executive director of the CanFASD Research Network. And then in episode 3, we talked to Gigi Davidson, and she's the founder of FASD Communities, and all of that awesomeness. If you haven't had a chance to listen to those, may I suggest just you can go back, however you're listening to this, whether it's on the blog, FASDsuccess.com. So in this episode, We are going to actually talk to the real life experts. We are going to talk to an individual on the spectrum. That's right. You know, I don't consider myself an expert. I consider myself an insider. Basically what that means, I've had lived experience. I'm a total nerd when it comes to FASD, learning about it, helping people. So, you know, I would know more than the average person just because I'm a geek about it. And that's all I talk about and think about. An expert is this young lady because, you know, she lives with the diagnosis. Like, she's an individual with fetal alcohol. And all I could do when I do teaching and training is give my best account of what I would think it would feel like through experience through a third party. Now, this young lady is not third party. She is first party, and she has, you know, dealt with this disability. And I have talked with her before for my online course. You know, we have coaching calls, and we bring in folks besides myself to talk to the caregivers about FASD, to the participants. Anywho, she is amazing. And I'm going to just stop babbling because you want to listen to her. She's going to give you some amazing insight. You're going to want to listen to this more than once because she just keeps coming with it. I just let her talk and talk. So who am I talking about? Who is this excellent young lady? This young lady I'm talking about, she's actually a young adult on the FASD spectrum. Her name is Maggie May. What she does is she shares her insights about growing up with FASD. She shares helpful hints and strategies she's found along the way to accepting her own FASD and understanding how it both affects her and also the people around her as well. She, you know, she graduated from a two-year college course with honors, and Maggie will be starting a Bachelor of Arts degree program in psychology. She actually finds time with all of that to speak publicly about FASD in training events, interviews, and through her YouTube channel as well. She is also, folks, the admin for the Facebook support group Flying with Broken Wings, as well as providing both support and education to people who may need it. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give it up for Maggie May. Here we go. Maggie, thank you so much for joining us. Top of the morning to you.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Oh, buddy, you know what? You are amazing, and I'm glad we got you. People are going to hear a sweet accent. Where are you from?
I am from Ireland, in the very rural part of Ireland.
So is this stereotypical if I'm picture eyes closed, rolling hills, foggy, lots of grass?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, how many people live where you live? How big is your town?
I'd say my town, there's about 400.
My goodness. That's awesome. That's picturesque. Then you're probably saying try living here, right?
Pretty much. No public transport.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know what? You've overcome so much. Let me just get into it. So you are a young adult on the spectrum. As a kid, did you notice?
So when I was younger, the people around me would more have noticed my differences. So for me, I thought I was, you know, acting like everyone else. Whereas if you're an outsider looking in, I was acting nothing like everyone else. I wasn't thriving in kind of with my work that I was doing, socializing with people my own age I wasn't doing. And just my whole behavior was nothing like the people around me.
And this insight comes from, because your mom is also involved in the FASD community as well, right?
Yeah, she set up FASD Ireland with her friend.
That I just wanted to give some like context because people will be like, "Wow, Maggie, that's some insight into your earlier days." Okay, so other people noticed. Did you notice, or you know, was there any? Were you getting in trouble? What was school like?
So I think for me, the first pointer was when I was about, I was five and I was in like first class here. And I was like jumping off tables. hiding under chairs when I get overwhelmed. And so that was what kind of my teacher was, who had then was a retired nurse, was saying, okay, there's definitely something underlying going on here. Mm-hmm. And she'd kind of been talking to my mom and saying, you know, I think she's showing symptoms of ADHD and stuff, but I cannot officially say that. So, but I definitely recommend you go see a specialist. And that was kind of the confirmation that my mom needed to say that she wasn't going insane when she was telling people that, you know, Maggie's just not reacting.
It's safe to say Ireland FASD is not highly recognized now in Ireland. Back, how old are you now? Sorry, I know you're not supposed to ask a woman how old you are, but this is just adds to the context of the interview.
I'm 23.
Okay, you're the best. Sorry about that. I know that's a major rule, but you know, in context. So even, you know, 15 years ago, how did your mom, if you know this, end up getting a diagnosis for you?
So she was friends with quite a lot of people because she'd been doing a lot of reading and researching and trying to figure out. And she also knew my biological mom's history. And so it was very easy to be able to determine that she had drunk while pregnant with me and the rest of my biological siblings. Mm-hmm. So she was kind of, she had joined the dots. And I think she was talking to someone in Germany or had seen something on the web, and it kind of, that was the confirmation. Someone came over from Germany visiting who was involved in the FASD world, and I think we'd met them for lunch or something, and she literally was just like, do you know your child has FASD? And my mom was just, that was the confirmation she needed for her to be able to go to my social workers and be like, look, I don't care, you don't believe me, but there is something wrong, and if I have to pay out of my own pocket, I will. So that's when my psychiatrist officially did the testing and diagnosed me with ADHD. But then, because I was showing different other symptoms, she actually went to Canada. So then she could officially diagnose me with FASD. And that's wow. How I got my diagnosis.
Your doctor went and got training, you know, out of country training to be able to understand how to diagnose you, right?
Yeah.
So what are you, what would that make you in your area, like the first person? No?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow. Wow, that's intense. And good on your doctor. Man, that's, yeah. Talk about going the extra mile for your patients, huh? Did you ever give her a high five for that one?
Oh, she's still my doctor.
Yeah, she just lives down the lane, right? I'm imagining that.
Five houses down.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. How are you dealing with this? Did you know you were getting tested for something? Were you like happily oblivious to it? What was that like?
I remember going to multiple different tests, and of course I had rampant ADHD. So, you know, some of the tests, like I got a CAT scan, and my poor parents were literally just willing me with their eyes for me to stay still. The test about 40 times because I just kept moving. I could not lie still for more than about 30 seconds. So everyone was very relieved when they finally got the, you stayed still long enough, we're okay. But then it was just different tests. And at the time, I had no idea. I just thought, okay. My parents, because I was in foster care, my then social worker had told them that they couldn't tell me what I was being tested for. And even when I got diagnosed with FASD, they weren't allowed to tell me. And I think it was because on her part, she didn't want me to have any bad feelings towards my biological mom.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was going through all these tests and I got a diagnosis and I didn't know I had a diagnosis. And my parents couldn't tell me. So I still never really knew what was wrong with me until I was in my teens.
Whoa. So you, Oh, okay. So you got just because you got diagnosed, you weren't told.
No.
Because your mom was trying to protect you, to not harbor bad feelings about your birth mom.
Well, my mom had actually really wanted to tell me, but it was actually my social worker was telling her, you cannot tell her. We're forbidding you from telling her.
That's a weird policy, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think it wasn't the right call for my social worker to make at all. Mm-hmm. But I think my social worker had this picture in her head that I would one day go back to my biological family and we'd all live happily ever after.
That's fair. So you're kind of putting yourself in other people's shoes, even though you were wronged a little bit. That's pretty grown up with you. I don't even know if most adults can do that, Maggie. That's incredible.
I think from even after I was told, I never harbored any bad feelings for my mom because the information wasn't there, and also because I'm from a gypsy community. That's the culture, is to drink. Right. And her parents were alcoholics. Her husband was an alcoholic. So there was no escaping that lifestyle for her. So I can't really bear any grudges to someone who didn't get the help they needed. The information wasn't there. And yeah.
Gosh.
We did our best.
Do you know what? This is the point in the interview when the audience realizes that you're even more mature than I am. Yeah, right on, man. Good for you. That's incredibly, incredibly sweet. So you weren't being told, yet you were still growing up. And how were you doing? Were you getting by? Were you in trouble or a combination of two? What was that like until you were told, I guess, that time frame?
I got suspended in school for climbing over the toilet cubicle because I got myself locked in. And I remember screaming for ages, can someone get me out? And no one came. So me thinking outside the box, I said I just climbed like 12-foot cubicle wall to get to the other cubicle to get out.
Yeah, like Alice Spider-Man, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And there was someone in the other cubicle who then very happily went and told the principal, and I was suspended for about 4 days. But that was just me thinking outside the box, as in,
yeah, man.
I was stuck. I wanted out. And my mom kind of went in. I was just like, well, you know, can you really suspend someone for just getting herself out of a situation? Yes, he went about it the high risky way, but she did what she had to do. So my mom would always kind of defend me to other people and try and explain why I was doing things, even though I myself didn't really know why I was doing them. Which would get me into, I was definitely a follower. So, you know, my friends, I'd be in with the cool gang, but I wasn't one of the cool kids. I was more just, you know, they needed some little follower and I would always be that person.
Now, sorry, that's my fault for jumping.
Oh, no, don't be.
How are you told that it's FASD?
I remember my mom kind of sitting me down and giving me hot chocolate with whipped cream. And then she kind of started talking about, you know, how my mom being an alcoholic, it's like an itch that won't go away, and that, you know, my mom tried, but she just couldn't resist not itching, and so she drank. And then that resulted in my brain being changed, and the fact that I wasn't going insane, that, you know, the reason I wasn't acting like everyone else wasn't my fault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that she could understand how I was getting myself into different situations and getting confused as to how I got there in the first place. And then she did very over quite a few months, kind of, you know, I would steal a bar of chocolate and forget that I'd taken it, and then my mom would find it and we'd have a fight, and then I'd cool down and be like, once I cool down, then I can explain, I don't know why I took it, or I really don't remember taking it. Yes, I've taken it. And my mom would be explaining, yeah, that's not your fault, that is your brain. And other situations like that, or I mean, I couldn't do math to save my life. And right. In school, it would be, we get like, we learn how to do addition. And then we get like 20 questions to bring home for homework. And as soon as I was out of the school and back home trying to do my homework, it was like I'd never seen it before. And at first, my mom, I think, thought I was just didn't want to do homework and was putting it on. And then she, you know, realized, no, this is genuine. Mm-hmm. And she had to fight the teachers who just thought I was pulling a fast one and just couldn't be bothered and stuff. Because as soon as I was back in the school environment, I remembered exactly how to do the math sums, and I could do those 20 questions in about 10 minutes. And I just always thought I was just stupid, and, you know, there has to be something seriously wrong with me. And my mom would then explain, no, this is your brain. You can't help it. We will find strategies that might ease it a bit, but it's okay if you can never be able to do transition. That's fine.
Wow, that's an amazing mom. Like, let's be honest. That's okay. So when you were told, did you have a hard time? Did you just, okay, say, oh, this is why? Did you accept it or no? Were you in a state of like, nothing's wrong with me? Where were you at that time when you received the diagnosis?
So for me, I kind of just like, oh, I'm sure everyone has it. It's fine. But boom, because I hadn't really realized how much it would actually impact my life. Mm-hmm. So whereas some people might, you know, have the shock reaction or the complete going into negative after being told, it took me quite a few years. I was about 17 when all of a sudden, you know, my friends were learning to drive or were moving out or were going out partying, and I wasn't able to do any of that. And for me, that was when I was just like, this isn't fair. I didn't ask for this. I don't want this. You know, I'm seeing all my friends planning to go to college, and I don't think I'll be ever able to go to college.
Right.
This isn't fair. And I think for me, that's when I started to just spiral into complete depression and be like, this sucks. I don't want this. I want to be like everyone else.
Right. Because you wanted to do these things. Did you feel like it was your parents like stopping you? Like, like, how did you feel about, like, did you know where they were coming from, or did you just think it was them not wanting you to do this, these things?
Oh, I thought my parents were complete, the worst parents in the world.
Right.
That they were just mollycoddling me and they were being unfair, and I couldn't understand why I couldn't go to a disco.
I'm now adding mollycoddling into my lexicon. I'll just tell you that much, okay? You liked it. Okay. Because I want to move on too, because there's so, you know, there is so much more. So you're saying, just so I'm understanding correctly, it wasn't until you started to realize that other people were doing that around your age were doing things that you weren't able to do, whether your parents weren't allowing you to, or whatever the reason was, that made you really depressed. Like, this sucks, because it sucks. I'm sure it would be horrible, right? Anytime, even I can remember being young, even not being able to do something that even the older kids could do, or yeah, I couldn't go away for a weekend like some of my friends, I was crushed. So I could see how you feel about that. And that's unfortunate that, you know, then depression gets you. How did we flip that script? Because that's certainly not the, maybe that's too abstract. How did things change from that? Like,
So about 3 months before my 18th birthday, the adoption went through. So we had applied for me to be adopted when I was 14. And once you're 18, you can't be adopted. And then my mom would go out and give talks to caregivers. And before she could only kind of reference to me because of the whole data protection, and because I was in foster care, I couldn't be seen to be putting a bad name on my biological family and everything.
Sure.
Whereas once I was adopted, I could not go and give my biological parents a bad name, but go out and talk. And so I think the first time I gave a talk was, you know, I was pretty much doing what I'm doing now and kind of talking, and I was talking about, you know, reasons I might have done something, I might have acted one way, and actually this was going through my brain and that's why I did it. And there's caregivers in the room who's were just starting to nod and kind of look at me shocked and be like, "You're describing my kid to a T."
Mm-hmm.
And it was that little light bulb that I could see, okay, this isn't going away. My FASD is never going to go away. It might change, and I might be able to kind of combat some of the symptoms and be able to kind of conquer some challenges that come with it, but it's not going to go away. And so I can either keep wallowing in my, this sucks, or I can be like, you know what, I can change. I can hopefully help kids who aren't able to express themselves properly yet, and hopefully be able to help them so that, you know, their caregivers can give them the supports they need or use strategies that have helped me that they might not have thought to try, and that actually might be that kind of eureka moment and where that kid might begin to thrive from my experiences. And I think for me, that's when I started to kind of just change my whole outlook from just this sucks to, you know what, I'm going to try and make a difference.
You are a bona fide badass. That was so well said. But okay, now let me, okay, I know that there's people that are listening to this that are just hearing you sound so competent, May. Like, you know, I would never, if we were just chatting on the phone, or, you know, if I saw you at a conference, no clue. because of your expressive language. But so I want to remind, you know, you still face challenges even to this day, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
You're 23 years old, and you live with your parents still, correct?
Yeah.
What, because I want folks to understand that, that even though you are competent, you know, you're sounding competent, you're accommodated, it's gravy, but you still struggle. Like you said, there are still symptoms that present themselves and you deal with every single day, right?
Oh yeah. Like for one thing, my memory, I will forget to eat. And my body and my brain will not tell me that I'm hungry. So I can go 24 hours without eating and not even notice. Other things like cleaning my room. I have no organizational skills whatsoever. And for years and years, it would get to the point where, you know, I start to find things on my floor beneath layers and layers of clothes that I'd forgotten I even owned. Mm-hmm. And you know, as I got older, it just wasn't suitable for my parents to keep going into my bedroom and going through all my stuff to try and clean my room. I never realized it until I was like a year ago that actually when they were going through my stuff, it was triggering me. So there'd be these huge meltdowns where, you know, could last for hours. And I could never really understand why I'd react such a strong way to them going through all my stuff, binning stuff, putting things in bin liners. You know, they'd be like, you know, you have to have your room tidy in 2 hours, or we're coming in with a black bin liner and anything on the floor is getting put into the bin.
Right.
And I think for them, it wasn't them being harsh. They just reached that point where, you know, you couldn't see my floor anymore. You could barely get out my door.
Yeah, it probably, you know, who knows what was in there, man.
Yeah, pretty much. And so, for the first maybe half an hour, I try really hard to like clean my room, and then my energy levels would just disappear, or I'm very easily distracted. So, I would all of a sudden see a magazine and we start reading the magazine. So 2 hours later they come in and there isn't a very big difference in my room. So they come in with black bin liners and start throwing stuff out that they didn't think was important to me. As in it might have just been like wrapping paper. But so for them they'd see that as rubbish. But for me that would be wrapping paper from a present that I got that's my favorite present ever. And stuff like that. And I never realized that actually what they're doing was triggering me. So that would set off a mountain meltdown. And so then as I got older, it just wasn't suitable for them to come into my room to an 18, 19-year-old and start going through all my stuff. And so we actually found a cleaner who was willing, who does home calls. So she once a week just comes in, does puts on my laundry, hoovers my floor, mops my floor, dusts, cleans out all the shelves. And she's not judgmental at all. So, there's nothing that she could find that would absolutely scare her and send
So
her running.
that doesn't make you feel like embarrassed when she goes in there.
No.
Like, yeah, the anxiety, like I could feel it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely.
I think for the first few times I was like, oh my gosh, because I'd gotten to such a bad state where to the point where my parents didn't want to deal with it and I didn't know even where to start. So that was her first ever, hi, this is Maggie's room. Good luck. And I think she spent about 4 hours here. And by the end of the 4 hours, it was like my room was clean from top to bottom. And so I've had it for about 6 months. And so, and the one thing is I'm always at home when she does the cleaning, so I'll help her clean. And that
But
way
you're
I don't
not
feel like.
okay. That's so nice. You're not like, okay, Consuela, get her done. And
Pretty
while you
much.
sit
Oh
there and
no.
eat cereal while she does it. Oh God, that'd be
Oh
so
no.
mean.
Like I'm the one paying out of my allowance for her, but I'll be in the room helping her clean, doing the laundry, and we'll be chatting and everything. So it's really casual. But it means I'm not leaving her to do all the work, but I'm in the room so I can see what she's doing and
Make less
she's
anxious for you.
yeah, because I know stuff that I want to keep isn't getting thrown out and she will not throw out anything without talking to me first. So even if it's a bit of rubbish, you're like, is it okay for me to throw this out? And if I say no, then she'll respect my wishes pretty much.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. That is neat. Now, I just want to bring this up because this is often talked about in my our close group and whatnot. You mentioned meltdown, right? Before you would have a meltdown.
Yeah.
Meltdowns are common, like that. A lot of parents deal with, the aggression, the yelling, the scream. Can you, if it's cool, like describe
Yeah.
like what a meltdown would happen to you? What would that feel like? What's going on?
For me, it would be the smallest things. It would just be to the point where something might have happened in school, and because I'm in school, I can't let it out. So my mom would just be really nice and say, how's your day been? And that would set me off because I'd have all this anger and frustration and stress. And it would just turn out to the point where I'd lose all sense. I couldn't control what I'd be saying or how I would be acting or my physical reactions to the point where I'd be scared myself because I'm not in control and I don't know how to get control back. And it would be to the point where my parents would be like, okay, we need to go to the other side of the house and lock all the doors so she can't run away. And on the bad ones, it could last for hours, as in I might just about be able to get control and then they might come back or they might say something and that will set me off again. And we tried multiple different techniques. I mean, we tried weighted blankets and that helped for a while, or just hot drinks.
You say we tried. Did you, you obviously didn't want to have these happen, right?
No, I hated it. And I think what caregivers and people don't understand that, or at least in my case, after a meltdown, I would have so much hate and self-loathing for myself that I'd lost control, that, I wouldn't be able to look at myself in the mirror without like wanting to just smash the mirror.
Yeah,
But
like you're so cringe embarrassed, right?
that and just the fact that it happened and that I couldn't control it. Every time I had a meltdown, it was like I'd screwed up again and I just kind of I tried my best and yet I still failed. So I just felt like a complete failure.
And you mentioned, because I cut you off like I do, I'm still learning this interview stuff. You said a hot drink was a light save, a lightsaber, a life, okay, a lightsaber, a life saver. What did you mean?
So, once I get to the point where I just be crying and exhausted and it's self-loathing stage, my mom would, very hesitantly come to my bedroom, knock on my door, and there'd be a hot mug of cocoa and some whipped cream on top if I was really lucky. And she would just give that to me. And for me, that was a sensory stimulation that was just soothing and it's warm. So it just kind of would warm me up kind of thing. And that would really help in the whole getting me to just finally kind of fizzle out. And it was just something that I could, it was comforting. It was something that, I didn't have to fight with.
Oh my gosh, hot cocoa. Would she try and would she try to engage with you or leave you alone, or what was your mom's reaction? Like, did she just
Pretty much, she learned the hard way that you don't make eye contact with me when you give me the hot cocoa.
No, that's important. That's important detail,
Yeah.
because that would just like round two, here we go.
Pretty much, I feel like I was being challenged, and I'm a very kind of, I like to be in charge. So if I feel that my authority is being challenged, that's not going to happen. That's not going to go over very well.
You're gonna lead some pack of a million people
Pretty
one day,
much.
Maggie. You know what I mean? I picture you. If there's ever a post-apocalypse, listen, you could be my leader, okay?
Oh, yeah.
So mom brings it in, learns her lesson, don't look, but now she doesn't. Would you talk about what happened afterwards?
Oh,
Hours later, days later? Not at all.
oh, we'd always talk about it. Because for both of us, it was a learning curve as to, okay, what set it off? Where my parents might have gone wrong and how they'd reacted, where I could have used a strategy that I might have forgotten about, or what do we need to learn from this meltdown? What can we do to try and avoid it happening from the same situation again? So they'd kind of be able to tell when I'd finally hit that stage where I was able to talk. And for years, I just wasn't able to express myself at all, so I wouldn't know. I'd just be like, I don't know what happened. And then as I got into my later teens, I was able to kind of describe, my brain froze. Or, actually, the reason that this was because one of my friends was mean to me in school. And so I was able to start to be able to describe what had set it off. Not always, there's sometimes where even I get just surprise meltdowns that I have no idea where they came out of.
Yeah, that's
And so then, my parents, we would all kind of sit down, my mom, my dad, sometimes my siblings, and be like, okay, so this happened. Let's think of some strategies together and try and put those into place and see if that might work.
right now you have accommodations going on in your daily life. I kind of want to get to those because because you're not just a meltdown or a symptom. Like, you're a human being, you have hopes and dreams, you've learned some lessons, you and your parents along the way. Well, did you finish school?
Did I finish? I did finish school.
Yeah. Okay, good.
I
Well,
was like,
okay,
did I?
congratulations.
Yeah.
I'm only saying that because last time we talked, you were still in school.
So that was a 2-year course specifically for people with intellectual disabilities.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a stepping stone as to, introducing them to a college environment, For me, it wasn't the right fit. I did the 2-year course, but I didn't really thrive because academically I wasn't challenged for the 2 years. So then this year I am doing a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology. But I've also discovered that from September there's going to be a certificate in counseling and psychotherapy that yeah. I'm planning to save up for so I can switch from psychology to do counseling.
Yeah, because listen, dude, that's your calling. Like you have an uncanny ability to explain it, and I just know if this was a live thing we were doing, the comment section would be buzzing, right? People would want to ask all kinds of questions. So let's just get into the daily. What does a day look like for Maggie, because you do jobs, right? So how do, with the memory issues, how do you go about handling daily tasks?
Every morning, I have a whiteboard that you can write on with a marker. So me and my mom every morning would sit down and we go through jobs, and so I'd write them down. Like we've got budgies, so cleaning the budgie table, feeding my kitten, emptying dishwasher, making breakfast, cleaning up after breakfast, and you know we don't leave anything out. So like I do the whole cleaning of the house. Structurally.
Mm-hmm.
So for like the bathrooms, it's cleaning the inside of the toilet, cleaning the outside of the toilet, dusting the windowsill, and it's really detailed so that you know I can't not do it, and that I can't say that the information isn't there.
You can't say, oh, I forgot.
Pretty much. And yet, you know, my mom can tell if it's a certain time of a month or I might be getting a cold or something, that my energy level might drop, and so jobs might only get half done.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really understanding. And so, you know, if I just come to her and say, you know, I can't do anymore, and if she knows it's just I'm being genuine, then she'd be like, it's okay, you know, I will do the rest, or you can do the rest in a few hours. You can go and just chill in your room for a few hours and just give me time to refuel.
And then there's no arguments, there's no meltdowns, and then you have a little rest up, right? A little refuel, and then you get back at her.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just that, you know, being away from the job for a few hours and getting to, you know, put something on Netflix or listen to music and then go back to the job. It's like I haven't seen the job before kind of thing, so I'm not feeling overwhelmed by it.
The narrative is to become independent because you're 23 at home. So you still live with mom. There's no ill will to that. Like you're not like wanting to be on your own, or you do and you know the limitations. How are you feeling about that?
It's definitely been intense at times. The rule was always no TVs in the bedroom. And then I became like 19 and I was like, yeah, I don't care. I had a good argument being like, because I'd had a portable DVD player and I kind of was just like, you know, but the screen's too small and I'm actually straining my eyes and it's causing my eyesight to become worse.
Right.
So we compromised. So I have a TV monitor in my room, but it's not actually connected to live TV. But it just means I'm not having to watch DVDs on a 7-inch screen. So in my mind, I completely, you know, won the argument. I have a TV in my room, even though it doesn't work with a TV.
They just didn't want cable.
Yeah, exactly. And my parents won because I don't have cable in my room.
And you're fine with it.
Yeah. But then, you know, there's other times where, you know, I might want a takeout for dinner. And my parents are like, yo, you're not having a takeout for dinner.
Right.
And, you know, I have to eat. I do the cooking as well, but they tell me what to cook pretty much. Someone who quite likes the unhealthy options, and I'd love to just live off pizza. Instead, you know, I'd be making vegetable soups and everything, and I'm just like, yeah, but I'm an adult, I should get to choose what I eat.
Yeah, it's like I could see where you're coming from, and then you could see where they're coming from.
Yeah,
because they just want to make sure you're good.
You know, my adopted siblings, they never lived at home. At this age, Some of them had moved out. Some of them had moved to Scotland. So I was actually the only one who's ever actually lived full-time until 23 at home.
Mm-hmm.
So before they'd have arguments, you know, well, when your sister was at home, she obeyed the rules. I was like, yeah, but she never had to be here at the age of 23.
And all valid from both sides, yeah. Right? For sure. You know, eating vegetables is the absolutely 100% right thing to do, but you want to shove a pizza down your throat. What are friendships like for you? Do you, you know, is it more online, offline? What's that like?
Pretty much all online. Because even to this day, I'm a complete introvert. I just don't know how to socialize with people my own age, mainly because in some situations I'm just like, you are just so childish, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then in other cases, they'd be like, wow, you just have no idea, do you?
Oh, jeez. That's the good thing about the internet, right? Because with all your work with flying with broken wings, do you still feel connected?
Oh, definitely. And I've made so much, you know, friendships through flying with broken wings. And it was nice to find a group that people understood me, because that was the first group I ever found where other people had FASD, because I've never actually met someone else with FASD. So it was really, I remember joining it and just feeling really strange when people were describing, you know, their day. I was like, you're pretty much describing my struggles or what I've had to overcome or what I'm going through at the moment. This is really weird and people aren't judging you.
That's true, right? As soon as you find your right tribe, because it must be difficult in your area, you know, women at 23, what they're typically doing where you live is probably the opposite of what you're doing.
Oh, pretty much. They're in long-term relationships. They're moving into flats kind of thing, or they're in student accommodation.
And that doesn't burn you? That doesn't miff you? You're happy with where you're at?
So for me, you know, I have looked into moving out. Mm-hmm. But the issue is the only place suitable, which would be, you know, watched accommodation, is in like a rehab center or like a drug addiction, alcohol rehab. Yeah. There's nothing in between. Mm. And so then I was kind of looking into, okay, maybe I can find someone to share with. But how do you tell someone who you want them to share a house with you and try and explain to them, yeah, I've got a disability, I can't do this, I can't do this, and still expect for them to want to move in with you?
Mm-hmm. You just haven't found the right someone yet that you'll be comfortable with. And yeah. no rush with where you're at. I mean, you're kicking some serious butt. You get your own flat now. You get zero money. Yeah, you're just sitting on your couch because you're paid your rent, you're broke. Oh, wait, that's just me. Okay. Yes, it is. And I thank you for sharing that. That's just being super honest, and I really appreciate that. What do you say to individuals that may have FASD that might listen to this, that don't maybe have a hard time accepting that this disability is what they have?
So I think, you know, advice is there's no escaping it. There is overcoming certain things that come with having it. Some things definitely do get easier as time goes on and as you kind of learn to accept it. But also you have to be really open with yourself. And, you know, just because people are telling you to accept that you have it, that's not you. You're lying to yourself until you yourself can say, you know what, I've accepted that I have this and it's not going away. And that is a painful journey in itself, because pretty much you're signing away the fact that you're never going to be like everyone else around you.
And that's something you want so bad.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing more than wanting to be like blending in with everyone else and not standing out. And even to this day, there's still days that I'm just like, you know what? I just want to be like everyone else. I'm so tired of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to have those days where you're just down in the dumps.
How do you rebound from those days?
Pretty much I kind of talk to people and, you know, now and again, some people might just message me out of the blue and be like, thank you so much. You know, your YouTube channel really helped me be the first step to me communicating with my child who has FASD. And that's kind of, you know, that's definitely an upper where I'm just like, you know what, I'm doing the right thing here by doing what I do. It's not all that bad. It just depends which way you look it up.
No, because not only, Maggie, you are the one of the most insightful individuals that I get to talk to. To heck with FAS. Like, you have a true gift to help people. That's why I had to have you on here. That's why, you know, that's a gift, because it's oftentimes it's hard for individuals on the spectrum to express themselves. And that seems to be, you know, your strength. I even remember it just came up. Didn't we talk one time? Because there's impulse issues too, right? And didn't your family make like a mailbox or something? Can you fill me in on that? Because I'm totally confabulating.
Oh, yes. So, you know, before I was getting my own allowance and stuff, you know, I wouldn't have money. So I used to, like, in my mind, I'd be borrowing from my mother's purse. In right. her mind, it was stealing. With the incentive that I'd always take money and, you know, the first I'd be like, oh, you know what, I'm going to buy my mom something really nice, thinking I was being the nicest daughter in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd get distracted and spend that money on chocolate or sweets or something. And so my parents got an outdoor mailbox that has a kind of lock.
Mm-hmm.
And so every day they would post their like purses, wallets, anything of valuable into it. And it's so subtle enough that it's not a safe. So people aren't coming into the house and be like, why have you got a safe?
Right.
Which is saving them from having to explain, and also saving me from having to be like, have to be, you know, oh my gosh, make sure my purse and everything is close by me in case she tries to steal it.
Right. Because it's out of sight, out of mind, right?
Oh yeah, it's just in her kitchen, and you know, it blends in, as crazy as that sounds. It's just like a black painted.
So it doesn't
mailbox.
Make you feel bad. I just thought that was. I just came up because I thought, what an amazing accommodation to come up with. So that there's, you know, we're just.
I think
avoiding...
I thanked them. I thanked my parents, being like, "Thank you for getting the temptation away." Because I feel terrible every time I take the money. So
right.
For me, it was them doing me a huge favor by getting rid of that obstacle. To the point where at this stage, they can now leave money around the house. They can leave their purses because I'm now getting my own money. So I don't feel the need to have to spend theirs.
That's great. I wanted to make sure. I'm glad I remembered that. Thanks, Brain. You're welcome. What do you want to do when you grow up? Like what are your kind of hopes and dreams, Maggie?
So for me, what I'm gearing at is to just do advocating. You know, which is why I was studying psychology and wanting to do counseling. Because for me, monitoring in Flying with Broken Wings has been amazing, and I've loved it, and it's really changed my life, just to the point where I know this is what I want to do. And the fact, you know, when I give talks to like primary school teachers in the college where I work, you know, I'm used to talking about 200 training teachers.
Mm-hmm.
In each session I usually do about 4 sessions, where I get to talk about, you know, how teachers could have helped me, or, you know, things to look out for. And I just love doing it. And I couldn't imagine my doing anything else apart from advocating.
No, you're exactly where you need to be.
It's,
no, stay, talk. you just can help so many people. You're going to help. You are helping folks that are even listening to this now. My last question to you, people that are listening, as so caregivers, think about that. What would you say to caregivers who are just not feeling very hopeful about their kids' future at this point?
You know, I always never believed I'd be able to go to college, and all of a sudden I'm doing college. And that was thanks to my parents managing to get through the worst times and being there to support me, even when I was at my worst. And the fact that, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there is times where they're just like, you know what, I've had enough. This is just too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I might write a card and be like, you know, I'm sorry for my meltdown. And that was the first time I'd have emotionally reached out to them. And so they kind of look back at all the small little things that to other people wouldn't mean anything. But to people who are caregiving for people with spectrum, it is a huge milestone. And I think they kind of keep looking back on them and be like, you know what? We've got this far. Let's go the whole way. And that, I mean, I know I broke my parents quite a few times to the point where they needed counseling. And that was okay. They went for counseling. They got out what they needed to say. And then they just kind of never made me feel like I was the problem. But my mom always said that it's okay to break down, and the challenge is just being able to pick yourself up and, you know, just try again. But she never kind of, if she needed to break down, she would break down, she'd cry, she'd get it all out, because holding it in just never was the answer for her. So yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. So yeah. Mic drop. You're the best, dude. And you're going to do so good, and you're going to help so many people. I just know it. I just know it. You're a pleasure to talk to. You're a pleasure to be around. Did I hear something about a YouTube channel? Like, how can people reach you, man?
Pretty much anyway. I've got a work email.
With like a foghorn.
I'm pretty much on every platform.
Well, listen, man, the future's so bright, you better buy shades, okay? Because you are doing amazing, and I just want to encourage you to keep going, because you are going to be a juggernaut, and you're gonna change a lot of lives. So thanks, dude, for taking this time to speak to lonely old me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I've had an absolute blast. And I always look forward to it.
You're the best. Oh, man. Wasn't that amazing? Maggie is amazing. I am so glad she was able to join us. Like I told you at the beginning, she's fantastic at explaining it. I just wanted to run a few points by you that kind of stuck out to me. One of them was receiving a diagnosis but not being told about the diagnosis. I could kind of see why her social worker sort of wanted to do that. I'm not judging, but the fact that that happened, that's awful. It, because you want to let individuals on the spectrum know, because it explains that it's, you know, it's their brain, not their character. Because so often, as you heard from Maggie, she just wanted to do well and wanted to please and you know, felt so much shame and embarrassment. And when she did have a meltdown, another thing that jumped out to me was she talked about how her family was gypsy and that there was generational alcoholism. And I can totally believe that. You know, there was a conference, a good conference here in Northern Ontario, Canada, called the Anishinaabeg G7. And so it's a First Nations conference, and they call it the G7 because they believe, you know, FASD has affected seven generations. And I believe it as well. And not only for First Nations, not only for, you know, gypsies, Irish, I don't care where you're from. If there's been alcohol for generations, chances are there's been FASD for generations as well. So I thought that was interesting. Another thing that stood out was when she got in trouble climbing the cubicle, you know, because she did her best, which she thought was logical. You know, she called it thinking outside the box. She thought she was, you know, doing a good thing, but not thinking about even going underneath the cubicle. And she did call for help. So I'm glad her mom backed her up. But it's interesting to see that thought process and what went into it. And do get in trouble. Oftentimes, their thought process behind it was logical to them, or they weren't thinking because of impulse control, or, you know, wanting to just be followers, to be a part of the pack. That happens too as well. So it was super interesting to hear that whole cubicle story, and I'm glad mom stepped up. I think also we got to give a lot of kudos to mom. Man, I should be talking to her too. It sounds like she did an amazing job normalizing Maggie's brain and not making her feel bad when something happens. And I know it's so hard to do, and I'm sure, you know, Meg even mentioned it, how her family went how her parents went to counseling, but I think her mom did a great job, because obviously the message got through that, you know, it's not your fault, it was your brain. So I think she did a really good job at that, and also explaining about BioMom as well. I like how she talked about alcoholism as an itch that she couldn't scratch. I was like, ooh, even that's a good aha one for me as well. With all of that, still having the wherewithal and the absolute acute insight, and I'm sure this obviously has been developed over a lot of years, and we're just hot off the press. You know, I know the 2020 Vancouver International Conference is coming up, and she just told me to tell you that she's going to be there, and she's going to be giving a mini keynote. So if you're going to Vancouver, make sure you say what's up to Miss Maggie May. And don't forget to, you know, just follow her. Like, she's got great insight, and you can find her in Flying with Broken Wings. So with that being said, this is episode number 4. If you're sticking around and you're still listening to this, you are cool, man, and your stock just went up in my book. I will say this, if you did enjoy this episode, please, if you could give us a subscribe, and that way what happens when we drop a new episode just like this one, bam, it goes right to your device. You are notified. It says, hey, listen, here he is. Oh yeah, and before I go, for all the show notes, you can check us out at www.fasdsuccess.com/podcast. You're awesome.